shit!
JB's eyes widened again as flame blossomed in four yellow petals from the flash suppressor of Mildred's M16. Hot air stung his cheek like a red ant's bite. He turned. A squat man in a filthy grayish sweatshirt and baggy sweatpants loomed over him with a fire axe raised over his head in both hands. He suddenly acquired a small, neat blue hole right through the bridge of his nose. He collapsed at the tip of the armorer's boot, the back of his head missing.
Damn, she's good.
JB threw himself down behind Mordok again to take stock of the tactical situation. Shots were still cracking in both directions. The heavy weapons still split the sky overhead. They mostly seemed to be working the far ridge line, trying to hose off any snipers the barrack gunners had missed. But nobody was charging. JB grinned at Mildred and gave her the thumbs up. She grinned and bobbed her head back. He dropped the empty mag out of the Beretta's well, stuffed in one of the extras he'd gotten from the corporal, then shoved the weapon down inside the back of his waistband. He scuttled around Mordok and the bike that had almost run him over to snag the machine pistol its rider had no further use for. JB had a particularly soft spot for that particular piece of Israeli ironwork, overly heavy as it was and shit for blowback besides. It was reliable and got the job done. He frequently carried one. He was pleased to find three full magazines stuffed in the pockets of the Coldheart's vest.
Jack! Jack, are you all right?
Fine.
The armorer saw the youth staggering toward him through the smoke, holding a trench knife with a spiked knuckle duster handguard in one hand and a baseball bat studded with cut-off nails in the other. He looked as if he'd bathed in blood, then rolled around in the dust to dry it off.
Find a blaster and follow me. You too, Millie.
Got him covered, John. Catch, Jack!
Mildred tossed him a Marlin lever-action carbine with brass brads pounded decoratively into it, outlining the stock and foregrip. He dropped the bat and caught it deftly. He led them up the railway embankment, which, while steep, was climbable. Bullets kicked up little spouts of dust near them, none near enough to pay attention to. Once at the top, he went to his belly and rolled right under the train. Mildred and Jack goggled. They looked at each other, shrugged, and followed his example. Rocking in his plush chair out of fear for his friends he couldn't quite suppress, Doc watched the battle unfold on a bank of monitors mounted in the command center in the car just behind Magog's engine. Escorted by a pair of guards armed with MP5 machine pistols in pristine condition, the general had led him forward through a flexible armored gangway that connected his personal car to the headquarters wag. They had then sat in climate-conditioned comfort, sipped sherry, and watched the ultimate in reality TV. Guilt panged him at sitting there in safety while his friends risked their lives. He wasn't the greatest asset in a fight, he knew, but he held his own and longed at least to share their peril. But there was nothing he could do. As with the general's quarters, the soundproofing was almost perfect. He could hear nothing of the shooting outside, much less the shouts of rage and screams of mortal anguish. He could sense the vibrations of the heavy guns firing outward from the train, weird harmonics weaving subsonic melodies he felt in his bones rather than heard. Unnervingly not blocked out was the irregular sound, like hail on a rooftop, of bullets striking the armored shell right by their heads and bodies.
Don't worry, my friend. Nothing will get through this baby. And the walls won't spall, even from point-blank hits from a 30mm chain gun.
Doc wasn't sure what that meant, but it sounded duly impressive. He had been far more impressed by the volcanic outpouring of fire from the train. He was also impressed by how surprisingly ineffective it was, comparatively speaking. To be sure, he could see scores of bodies, or sizable chunks of them, strewed across acres of desert. But that kind of outgoing firepower should have scoured the land, not just of all life, but everything, right down to bedrock. Or so it seemed to him. Still, the carnage had been quite exemplary, he had to admit that. He hoped he hadn't turned too green. Something beyond worry and incipient nausea began to bother him, as the volume of fire began to diminish.
If I may be so bold as to speak, General.
Go ahead.
I notice that all our attention is being drawn to the south side of the train.
I was just noticing the same thing. You've an acute military eye, along with your other accomplishments, Professor.
The General uttered orders. His words broke off crisply and decisively, without being barked or snapped. And men obeyed them, it seemed, because it never occurred to them that they might not. Whatever else one could say about the man, he had a gift of command, which Doc couldn't help but admire. The techs pressed keys, and the views on the monitors rearranged themselves, so that the largest one showed what the hardpoint-mounted cameras on the train's north side showed. Even as they did so, the hailstorm thumping suddenly began to sound from that side of the train. The monitors showed muzzle flashes sparking from the brush hard by that side. Doc could make out forms prone or crouching in concealment. He realized they were too close for the train's mounted weapons to touch them.
Huh. I should have ordered that brush cleared back at least 200 yards. I'm getting lazy in my old age. Still, we can't clean up the whole Deathlands. Well, at least not until we find the Great Redoubt. What won't we be able to accomplish then, huh? It'll be a great day, Professor, huh? Huh. What's that?
Apparently, some of the cameras were dirigible. An operator had swept one back to look along the side of the train, then panned back out again. He swung the remotely operated camera inward once more to reveal the heads and shoulders of three people lying on their stomachs, firing outward at the Coldhearts attacking from north of the line.
By the three Kennedys! Those are my friends!
Escaping?
Jack, JB, and Mildred crouched beneath an armor-shelled wag.
Not without Doc, Jack.
Like Millie said. Then what?
Fighting. Don't you think it's a little funny that all the excitement's been happening on one side of the train?
Jack looked surprised and bobbed his head.
What can the three of us do if they're sneaking up from that direction?
Maybe keep them from getting onto the rail wag. Maybe get somebody's attention, draw some help. At least keep from getting backshot for sure.
I'll buy that, John.
For a moment, it looked as if she might say more. After all, the armorer was talking about helping the people who had murdered Ryan and a lot of helpless women and children and carried them all off as slaves. But the Magog soldiers held at least some constraints on their behavior, some code of something at least a bit like decency, which was more than the attackers had. She popped the mag from her M16, made sure it was loaded, then drove it home with the heel of her hand.
Let's do it.
El Abogado's creepy crawling artists had been sent to the train. With the major assault attracting everyone's attention away from the north, it was hoped that would give them some opening to slip inside the train proper. And once within that impregnable metal shell, who knew what they might be able to accomplish? Fearing correctly that the Great Railwag had automatic sensors that might detect their approach, whether or not any human was looking for them, the would-be infiltrators had been ultra-cautious. It worked, and that they approached within sprinting distance of the train without detection. It didn't, because their approach had taken longer than planned. The main assault had already petered out, allowing defenders to think about something other than immediate survival. JB, Mildred, and Jack had spread out and crawled forward on their bellies, just far enough to bring their blasters to bear on the scrub north of the track. The armorer and Mildred both had M16s. JB had passed Jack the Uzi. Since Jack was an indifferent shot, it made sense for him to have the least accurate blaster. Marksman or not, Jack's predator's eyes spotted movement behind a creosote bush. He splashed 9mm bullets at it from the Uzi, and he missed.
Fuck you!
The wiry little outlaw he had been aiming at reared up and fired back with a decrepit bolt-action 22 rifle. He didn't come any closer to his mark than Jack had, but Mildred planted a bullet unerringly between his eyes. Detected, the infiltrators went to ground and opened a brisk but wild fire at the trio. The friends fired back, killing two and tagging at least three more. Then shots cracked out to the left and right of them along the north side of the train. Soldiers were crawling beneath the train and shooting from inside the cars through windows and firing ports. Grins thrown from the top of the train began to burst in the scrub. By this time, the shooting from the train had almost stopped. The attackers on that side were dead, fled, or hiding. El Abogado's posse weren't hang-and-bang fighters. Sensing that all chance of success was blown, they melted back into the scrub. A squad of SEC men began a fire-and-movement advance into the scrub in pursuit. Several wounded Coldhearts were dispatched with bullets behind the ear. The SEC men kept moving forward by cover-to-cover rushes, but without much chance of catching any more. Another party profoundly impressed by the volume of fire laid down by Magog was Chato. The sudden, stunning coruscation of enormous muzzle flashes had made his decision for him on a pre-conscious level. He turned and gave the boot to his pony.
Yeah, yeah!
He was already below line of sight, heading away, when the thunderous roar rolled over the hill. He hadn't gone half a mile before he rode into a broad, shallow wash with a bottom of fine, almost white sand. At the far side sat a solitary rider, El Abogado in his immaculate frock coat and Panama hat, astride his cream-colored mule with black-tipped ears.
Where are you going in such a hurry, my friend?
Away from this fiasco.
Indeed. I believe I shall accompany you.
But what of your followers? Do you not seek to avenge them?
They are dicks.
Well, do you intend to drag me back in disgrace so that you can take my place?
As what? Leader of an even bigger bunch of dicks? Ah, no, my friend. In all the Deathlands, there is no commodity so plentiful as violent fools. It's as well to be unburdened of this lot, don't you think?
Yeah, I guess. Then what do you want of me?
You are an exemplary sociopath, Chato.
What does that mean?
It means you have yourself a new partner. Such gifts as yours are useful. Shall we ride on? The brighter of our former followers will be fleeing the debacle behind us by now. It would hardly do for them to overtake us now, would it?
And so they rode away south together, Chato on his paint pony, El Abogado on his fine mule. As they did, it seemed the weight of the whole world dropped away from Chato's skinny shoulders. His cold-hard army was a monster. Sooner or later it would devour him. He had known that from the start. But now, he was free. He began to smile. It had been a good plan, after all.